if you're really cold, it's like putting something in a refrigerator. It doesn't go off. Is that right? Yeah. So that's why cool is good. But it's also, just on this occasion, before the real talk begins, again, I thank you for coming here this evening, and also thank you for giving us the opportunity to give service to you. I know that many people feel that as Buddhist monks, that your job is to serve us, which you do very well when it comes to food and cleaning people's spectacles. And looking after us in so many ways. But the service is always like two ways. You give to us and we give to you whatever we possibly can. And it's wonderful to actually to see the effect of that service over so many years. It looks like I'm starting the talk. Is that okay, Jake, or should I just wait for a while? Okay, do you want to do that introduction first then? Okay, well, forget about that. We'll just carry on talking. I'll carry on talking until I've said enough, and then we can meditate until midnight. And at midnight, that's when we do some chanting to bring in the new year. And the chanting is very nice because it's like a blessing for you all, for your happiness and well-being and your prosperity. Sometimes people say, what about prosperity at this time? You know, I've seen even overseas that people have so many concerns and worries about the future of our world. But when I see the people in this world, there's some wonderful people in this world who have a good sense of humour and they like to laugh and be kind to one another, look after one another. And that's one of the most wonderful parts of this world, to see people's good qualities. When you see people's good qualities, especially by travelling, you find, what has people got to worry about? Maybe I'm living in an isolated place amongst the Buddhist community. You're always very kind to me and kind to the monks and the nuns, look after everybody. That's a wonderful thing to see. And so that means that you can see the goodness in people, the goodness in this world. And I'm sure that that's what's going to happen in our future. That goodness will keep on growing. It is the media sometimes. It's always people pay much more attention if there's some tragedy or there's some disaster. Somehow people like to look at the problems in this world rather than the solutions. And that's one of the reasons why I gave the talk on Friday night about you go overseas, you see so many solutions, good people, kind people doing wonderful things. And having also the good attitude when things go wrong. And I mentioned that to a few people. A few people, I can see their great kindness. And that really moves me when they told me that some people actually saw my photographs when I was teaching the retreat over in Kuala Lumpur and noticing how thin I had become. I really appreciate people's kindness. And of course, you don't know why that happened. That was because we're on a retreat. People try to do the best they possibly can. And on that particular retreat, it was a six-story building. I was in the top story. I don't know why they keep doing that to monks. They put you in the top story, but where the food was in the bottom story. And I had to eat. So about three or four times a day, I had to go down to the basement where the food was served and where there was interviews and go up to six stories, and the lift had broken. I had to walking up six stories. That's a long way at my age. And so that's why I lost about 5 kilos, I reckon. I probably did. Go again, thank you. That's not... No, that's one of the reasons why. But it doesn't really matter, because whatever happens, you have to do it. You just make some fun of it. And it's the ability to enjoy disappointment rather than criticize people because of it. I think that's a wonderful thing I see with people these days. Something happens, there's always something you can do about it. That's why when people do complain about all the disasters and terrible things which happen in this world, I know that now travel has started again, many people are flying overseas. And so once again, I told people over in Singapore, where I went on the way back, about the three benefits of dying in an aircraft explosion. You all remember those, don't you? The three benefits of dying in an aircraft explosion at 30,000 feet. Number one, instant cremation. Have you ever tried to arrange somebody's funeral service? It's really difficult, it's very expensive, you have to find out the best time when the monks can come and everybody else comes. If you die in an aircraft explosion at 30,000 feet, you don't have to arrange anything, it's done by the airline for you. Instant cremation, and also special benefit, you get what they call spreading your ashes. Have you ever known what to do with your ashes once somebody dies? Spread them at Bodhinyana Monastery. There's so many ashes at Bodhinyana Monastery. We're trying not to have people put plaques there, who's underneath the ground there. Because if we do, none of you would like to go walking down there in the middle of the night. You'd be afraid of ghosts. So many people have been their ashes have been cremated down there. Are you sure it's safe at night? Not only that, but some people have buried their dogs and cats down there. And I really wondered, I mean, dogs and cats, do they get on? their ghosts, do they chase each other and bark and whatever? I'm sure they must, you know. Probably at midnight when people hear all these sounds down there, it's probably the cats and the dogs chasing each other. But anyhow, 30,000 feet, instant cremation, spreading of ashes as well. And then the second benefit is that it doesn't cost you any money. In fact, the family make money out of it. You get the insurance back from the airline. And of course, you know the best benefit of all, of dying in an aircraft explosion at 30,000 feet?
Closer to heaven.
Closer to heaven, yeah. So it's easy to go the rest of the way. And making fun of tragedies like that means that people don't get so afraid. It's part of life that these things happen, but it's very rare that they happen. And it's one of the reasons why that what you are afraid of, if you're afraid of it, anxious of it, you make it more likely to happen. But if you're not afraid of things and you can have a light-hearted approach to things, then it's less likely to happen. This is actually one of the amazing things about life, that what you're anxious of, sometimes you bring about, you create the causes for that. And I often notice that with people in relationships, when people are so afraid of what will happen, if the relationship falls apart? When you get so afraid and so controlling, that's when the relationship does fall apart. Instead of just relaxing and trusting one another. And that's the same with even Buddhist society. What would happen if we can't pay the bills? Is any of the finance committee here this evening? Is San here? She was here earlier. Don't think so. Ah, good. Okay. So why are the operations manager, please keep quiet, okay? Why are sometimes the finance people worried about can we always pay the bills? Because I was saying this to people over in Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur, because every Buddhist society I go to, they're always raising funds for something. And I said, don't worry so much. I'm telling the story of this place, of our Buddhist society in Western Australia. And is Eddie Fernando outside? I know his son is here. But anyway, I remember the time we brought Dharmasara Nuns Monastery. This was like the first monastery, Buddhist monastery for women, a separate monastery. I think, you know, certainly in outside of Asia, people had monasteries for the monks, and sometimes they have a part of that monastery for women, but they weren't having their own place. So when we decided to do this, let's do it and let's do it big. That's my... Because, you know, I was like born in August, like the lion month. So you always tend to want to do things big and impressive. So decided here in Perth to make a big monastery for women. But it's very difficult to do. And I do recall one of the first times, this is an old story, but it's a story which I will never forget. You know, we put an advertisement in our newsletter. Is it okay that people would lay the like, a monastery for women outside of Bodhinyana, just for women? And they all said, yes, we would like this. But then what do you do? So we started some fundraising. We weren't getting far at all. Maybe 30,000, 40,000. It took a lot of hard work just for getting a little bit of money. But the major point was that we were making people aware of what we were doing. And then this one occasion, this man said he wanted to meet me at Serpentine Monastery. And he arrived in just a simple car. And I'd never seen this man before in my life. He said he was a Buddhist. He was Caucasian. And he said he was a Buddhist, and his wife had just given birth to their first child, who happened to be a girl. And he said, in celebration of my first child's birth, as a woman, I want to make sure that if my daughter wants to become a Buddhist nun, she has a good place to be a Buddhist nun. So I want to make a contribution to your collection for a Buddhist nun's monastery. And that's when he handed over a check. Remember how much that was for? For $250,000. $250,000. And when I saw that, as soon as I saw that, I'm usually a very calm monk, but I will confess, my hands were shaking. He never expected such a large amount of $250,000 from someone I never knew. And he just handed it over to me, and that gave this big boost to our Nuns Monastery project. But then what happened? And again, I love this story because this is not to worry. Just get inspired and just do it. So what we did... What's this here? You see? Okay, we'll play the recording at 11 o'clock. Okay, Jake, we'll do the recording at 11 o'clock. But then I'll just tell the story about the Nuns Monastery. I'm not supposed to start yet. It was like cold outside, there's no one to talk to, so I felt lonely, and I came inside to talk to you. But anyway, that nun's monastery, that we were looking at all different types of land, anywhere, and it was all like 30 acres, 10 acres, and I thought, that's not appropriate for Buddhist nuns. Why should they have a tiny piece of land while the monks have 100 acres? That didn't sound right to me. So when one day we were in, just outside of Midland in the hills, and I'd always remember, I must have some photographs somewhere, of passing by a big sign on the side of a property, for auction, 563 acres of solitude. And as soon as I saw that, my nature was, let's have a look. And the driver said, no, 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 we can't afford that. What do you mean? It costs nothing to have a look. So we had a look, and it was obviously perfect. Those of you who have been over to Dharamsala, just how, what a beautiful piece of property that is. You know, pretty close to Perth, much closer than Bodhinyana, and 563 acres. And you've probably only been to part of it. It takes a long time to walk around the whole thing. Remember, before the nuns went in there, a couple of monks, after lunch they went there and they spent all afternoon walking over it. It's really huge. If you really want to know how big it is, it's 2 kilometers long by 1.1 kilometer wide. You can almost build a suburb in there. And I did check it out. It's roughly the same size as the Vatican. So we can make a big Buddhist state there. My plans for the future, I should let you know. But anyhow, when we saw it, no way in the world can we purchase that. Who knows? That's why it's just you don't feel fear. You feel, don't let that expectation of something which is impossible, you can't do it. Don't let that ever stand in your way. So instead we decided at that time with our treasurer to see how much we could afford. And so counting up all what we could loan from here, borrow from there, the maximum, real maximum, this would really stretch us and make us have to stop doing other stuff, $600,000. That's all we could afford. So the treasurer told Eddie Fernando, who was our bidder, that's the limit, 600,000, no more. And what happened? Before they even started the bidding, there was two monks, myself and Ajahn Chattamalo. We went there early, about an hour before the auction. And we did some really strong chanting. We really blasted that hillside. And we told those heavenly beings, look, this is for a nun's monastery, this is important, we're not just doing this as a development, this is actually for the future of the Dhamma, of Buddhism. We're really going to give this everything we have. And so you, Deva, should do the same. There's a few times I've done heavy chanting like that. Don't ask me to do it for you, it's only for big projects. And so, once we finished the chanting, we went there for the actual, it was an auction. If you've ever been to auctions, the whole job of the auctioneer is to get the most he possibly can. So they started the bidding. Does anyone bid 300,000? Someone put their hand up. 325, 350, 350, 375, do I hear 375, 400, 425, do I hear 450, 450? Just to get people excited. But of course, good old Eddie Fernando, he'd done this many times. So eventually he bid our limit 600,000. And that's when I started my chanting again. Trying to find the chant to keep people's mouths closed. And then someone put their hand up, 625. Oh, yeah. This is terrible. You heavenly beings, what are you doing? And that's when Eddie, famously, is he coming yet? He's outside, okay. And that's when he put his hand up. 650. And the treasurer, I was standing next to the treasurer, Ajahn, stop him, he can't do this, we can't afford it, he's got no authority, he can't do this. And then that's when I said, look, have some faith, some confidence, this is the beautiful property of, yeah, we can't afford it, but we'll find it. And of course that's what happened, it passed in at 650. that was the limit. Anything less than that, the seller wouldn't actually accept. So we got the land. And I remember just after the auction, sitting here on a Friday night and making the announcement. I said, I would like to announce that we managed to purchase this 563-acre property for Buddhist nuns in Perth. And people were so inspired, they started clapping, as you would do, because it was inspiring. And did we have trouble raising the rest of the money? No, of course not. When it's inspiring, it's meaningful, it's easy to do. That's one of the reasons why that this place has grown so much and so big over all these years. Another year is going by tonight. And look how much we have grown, because basically as long as I'm the boss here, there's no need to fear anything. If you go bankrupt, I volunteer to go to jail for you. It'll be a nice retirement home for me. Every time I need a retreat, just gently punch one of the prison officers and I get 2-week retreat in solitary. Of course, that's only joking. The main thing is the inspiration which we have. Now, I did promise to start the talk at 11 o'clock and it's now just turned 11. So, here we go with apparently the introduction, which is what we've just been doing over in the community hall. Got any sound? This is okay. That's because it's the first song was called Silent Night. Okay, we'll try again. 2 minutes, okay. Okay, it's a story of my life, but I know it's going to happen because I'll do some chanting from the devas. Please get some sound. But it's something which people don't have confidence these days, and faith in the kindness of other beings and other people. That's the other thing which I kind of can't understand. When I do go overseas, or when many of the monks go overseas, you know, we very rarely, if ever, have any health insurance. Why not? Ajahn Brahm, the Buddhist Society in Western Australia can afford health insurance. Why don't you have any? And the reason is, the last two places I went to, in Singapore and Malaysia, I know that if I get sick there, if I actually slipped on those 6 stories of stairs and broke my leg, I would have no worries about going to the hospital and having the legs fixed. The only worry I would have is which doctor would pay for it, because they'd all be competing against each other. No, it's my turn. No, it's my turn. No, I want to pay for this. Isn't that the case? You know, I just had a little cough when I was over in, well, not really a cough, it was just I was speaking so much and also running out of breath after 6 stories of stairs. And so because of that, just hardly much of a tickle in my throat at all. But what happens? I got all of this medicine. Because many people want me to be sick. It's not really compassion, is it? They want me to be sick, so once I'm sick, they can make some good karma by looking after me. Okay, here it is. No? Got the clapping? Okay.
It's coming through now.
There's coming through now. Okay, very good. Change the words. So what we were doing there, for those who weren't there, this was using some what we usually call carols and changing the words to make them very Buddhist and very inspiring. And of course, whenever I do this surprise from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve, we always try something new, opportunity to innovate. And if it really works out very well, people get inspired. If it doesn't work out and people complain, then it means I can relax and rest and retire from my teaching life. Unfortunately, this time people quite liked it, so I'll have to carry on. Is that right? Oh dear. So that's what. Yeah, that's one of the things which we can do. Whatever we do in life, we just give it a try, see what happens. And then when we see what happens, both ways, nothing can really go wrong. And it's also, people get very inspired that, you know, you are trying to do something new, just like the nuns' monastery. And just like, don't worry about the funding. I'm sure it will happen. And this is, I've always found this happening. Next year, that we're going to have our 50th anniversary of our Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And I was talking about the last Friday night talk before I left, because when we had our 30th anniversary, again, we do it really big, Supreme Court Gardens, and that was, again, 19 years ago. And everything seemed to go perfectly. But then what happened in the morning time, when I woke up, came out of, I don't know if I had my caves, I think I did. I came out, I looked at the sky, and it was raining. This was supposed to be a full moon Sunday in May. It's very unlucky if it rains in May. June maybe is, you know, more difficult, but May. And so I looked at the weather forecast, and it's not the news you wanted. The weather forecast reported that there was a severe weather event. So the last time I told a story, it might have been 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I'm doing it quite quickly. About a half an hour before the VIPs were supposed to arrive, about 6:30, it already got dark. And one of the women came running into the VIP tent where I was. Is Cherry still here? Cherry? Okay. Remember, that was your mum, Shirley. I will never forget her for this. She came running into the VIP tent, crying her eyes out. And at that time, I thought something must have gone terribly wrong, like somebody falling over, electrocuting themselves or something, and dying. But then she wouldn't tell me why I had to come out. Instead, when I came out, she was crying, and she just pointed up at the sky. You could see the full moon. The clouds had parted over Supreme Court Gardens, and the full moon was out. It was beautiful. And it never rained. It did a short shower for about 2 minutes, but we managed to hold our ceremony in the dry. And that was weird. That was the words of this commentator. Community TV came. No one else came because they thought it was going to be cancelled. We held that ceremony and we celebrated our 30th Vaisakh. That evening, Supreme Court Gardens flooded under 2 inches of water. We'd left by then. And then the Quinana Freeway also flooded. There was a severe weather event, but we still held our ceremony because it was a beautiful thing to do. Vaisakh Day on a Sunday, full moon evening, 30th anniversary of our BSWA. And that taught me a lot. The fellow in charge of Rees party hire, he sent this email to one of the organizers he was dealing with. And the email said, "Who is this Ajahn Brahm fellow? Because I want to ask him who's going to win the horse racing today." That was a comment he made. But anyway, that was like the inspiration, which means that even you look at the future and you think the odds are stacked against you, you feel that too much negativity. No, don't follow negativity. Follow the beautiful positive aspects of life. And then you find amazing things do happen for you in life. So every time I hear people say negative, recession next year, problems in the world, political instability, never mind that. You're in a very beautiful, positive Buddhist society. And you can feel that positivity and inspiration. Look, how many Buddhist societies do you know in the world with people come from so many backgrounds? Where do you all come from? How many people come from Sri Lanka? Put your hands up. How many people from India? It was one of you earlier. How many people from Nepal? Couple of families this morning for Dana. How many people from North Korea? Yeah. You're probably here, but you can't admit it because... And we were from Bangladesh. A lot of Bangladeshis. How many people from Singapore? Oh, come on, Leha, you're Singaporean. How many people from Malaysia? How many people from Indonesia? Only two. Crikey. You know, when I was just coming back from Malaysia through Singapore, you saw so many Singaporeans at the airport. A whole flight of them came in. I don't know, it's just an ordinary flight. I don't know where they were going. They were landing in Singapore for a few days. But half the passengers on the flight knew me. They said, are you Ajahn Brahm? I said, yes. You know what they said next? Can we have a photo? And this was actually while I was queuing up in the passport control in Singapore. There's a big signs everywhere. Absolutely no photographing in the customs area. They didn't stop them. But that was actually kind of fun. So anyway, there's many Indonesians. How many South Africans here? How many Ukrainians? Russians? How many... who else have we got? How many Australians? Okay. How many Thais? This is the wonderful thing. If you go in any other city in the world, you'll find Thai monasteries, Thai temples. But in the Thai temples, very few of other nationalities go. You can find Sri Lankan temples, but in Sri Lankan temples, how many Malaysians and Singaporeans and other nationalities go? There's something special about this place. You have people from all the different parts of the world coming together and enjoying each other's company, especially on a new year. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if that happened in the whole world? It's a showing we can have peace and harmony. People sitting together, sharing each other's food at Dana, being friends with one another, singing Christmas carols or Buddhist carols together. It's a very beautiful thing which you're doing here, which inspires me, which means it does give hope in this world. One of the stories which is in Opening the Door of Your Heart was called The Most Beautiful Sound in the World. And there's two stories about the most beautiful sound. The first most beautiful sound story was of this old man who worked really hard looking after his children, making sure they had a good education. And they sent them down into big universities in the city. They'd all did very well. Many of them became professionals, doctors, engineers. And when they did very well for themselves, they invited their father to come and visit the city for the first time in his life. First time the father had seen a great city. And the first day when he was walking through a poor part of the city, he heard a sound which was the worst sound he'd ever heard in his life. I don't know if that was, well, I don't mind trying. But he was so interested, what could make such a terrible noise? He followed it to his source, and there he saw in the back room of a house a little boy, maybe 7 or 8 years of age, trying to play a violin. And he thought that violins, why would anybody play such a terrible instrument which makes such a lousy noise? And he thought he never wants to hear a violin ever again. And the second day, in another part of the city, he heard a beautiful sound. He wanted to find out what was causing that sound. And there he found in the front room of a house an old woman playing a violin. She was a maestro. And he realized that the sound which he was hearing was not the fault of the violin, the first sound. The young boy had yet to learn how to play it properly. And then he realized, with the wisdom of people who haven't gone through educational establishments, old men from the villages in the remote areas, he realized that's the same with religion and even politics. If you see a person playing a religion and being just really nasty, really eccentric and very violent, it's just like the young boy who hasn't learned how to play the instrument properly yet. But if you know how to play, say, Buddhism well, it's beautiful music. So don't be criticizing people, whether they say they're a liberal or a conservative or a communist or whatever. Sometimes they just haven't learned how to play that well. But when you hear a maestro, it's beautiful. But the next day he heard a sound which was more beautiful than even the maestro playing a violin. And that was the sound of a concert, of an orchestra. Because in an orchestra, everyone who plays the different instruments has to be a maestro. Even that guy who plays a triangle had to train for years how to ding hit the triangle. But then they had to all learn how to play together in harmony. And that made the most beautiful music in the world. And that's when, you know, I wrote in that story that if all the religions in the world, all our countries in the world, all the genders in the world could be a maestro of their own religion, their own national identity, their own gender identity, learn it well and do it well, and then learn how to play together in harmony, we'd have a beautiful world. So that's one of the reasons why I love that story. But there was another story which I told over in Kuala Lumpur about the most beautiful sound. And many of the people who heard it paid full attention but were quite disappointed at the end. But nevertheless, I'm going to tell the story to you now. It was about an Australian man who was trekking in the Himalaya Mountains. And as he was trekking in the Himalaya Mountains, he was taking so many photographs of the flowers and the shrubs in those mountains that he lost track of the rest of his trekking team. He thought he knew the way, but he soon got lost. And this was in the foothills of the Himalayas. The sun went down very quickly and it started getting cold. And in the distance he could hear the howls. Of things which could be mountain lions or old monks, who knows which. And so he got scared. In the distance he saw the lights of some building, so he went straight towards that building, and good luck, it was a Buddhist monastery. He knocked on the door, said he was lost, it was very dangerous outside, they let him in, and the abbot of the monastery, which was very kind, said, yes, this happens quite frequently, so we can let you stay here overnight, and in the morning we'll take you to where your trekking team usually are. But he said, because you're a Westerner, an Australian, The only bed which is suitable for you, said the abbot, was in his room, so I can let you stay in there. It's no problem for me. So he spent the night in the bed in the abbot's office in this remote monastery high in the foothills of the Himalaya mountains. He was exhausted. He fell asleep very quickly, but then around midnight he woke up. He woke up because there's the most beautiful sound in the whole world in this room. He'd listened to the Berlin Philharmonic in the Sydney Opera House. He'd listened to Ajahn Sona's Christmas carols, which we just played in BSWA. He listened to some of the most beautiful music in the whole world, but this was far, far better. And as he was listening to it and tears were rolling down his face, he fell into a very deep sleep. When he woke up in the morning, he had to get up, have a quick breakfast, and the monks would take him to rejoin his trekking party. But then as he was leaving, he asked the abbot, "Thank you so much for looking after me, but around midnight I heard this beautiful music. What was it?" And the abbot said, "Oh, you heard that too, did you?" He said, "Yes, what was it?" And the abbot said, "I'm sorry, but I cannot tell you. It's our monastery rule that only monks can know what that music is." And he was Australian, from Sydney. So straight away he said, "Okay." He opened up his wallet and got a $100 note out. "Then it's nothing to do with money." "Okay, 500. I have to know what that music was." He said, "No, I told you we can only let monks know that. That's kind of supernatural. And there's no amount of money would persuade the abbot to tell him what this music was." So he had to leave. When he got back to Sydney, he was obsessed with this music. He couldn't get it out of his head. He went to psychologists, psychiatrists. No one could help him. He couldn't sleep at night, wondering what the source of this music was. So 1 year later, he turned up in this monastery in the Himalaya mountains again. He was desperate, obsessed with finding out what this music really was. And so he saw the abbot, and the abbot, "Oh, it's you again." He said, "Yes, I have to find out what this music was. It's driving me crazy not to know." And the abbot said, "Sir, I told you already, I can only let monks know what that music is." And he said, "Yes, I realize that. So please, ordain me as a monk." That's how desperate he was. So, it takes a couple of years of training, just like in Bodhinyana Monastery, to become a monk. Okay. Ordain me as an Anagarika. I don't care how long it takes. I have to find out what that music was. Okay. So he started the long training of becoming a monk. And after 2 years of learning the chanting, learning the rules, learning all the stuff which a monk has to know, the abbot gave him the full ordination. And as soon as the full ordination was complete, this Australian new monk said, "Okay, I'm a monk now. Tell me what that noise was." And he said, "I can do even better than that, monk. Come to my office just before midnight, and I will show you." So he was really excited. 3 years since he heard that music, he went to the abbot's office to find out what was making the most beautiful music in the whole world. So he got there really early, waited and waited. About 12:45, the abbot came into his office with this young Australian monk and said, "Are you ready for this?" He said, "Because this is really almost unbelievable." And he said, "Yes, I've been waiting 3 years to find out." "Okay," said the abbot. And the abbot opened a drawer in his office and took out a set of 4 keys. And he pulled back a curtain in the back of the office. And behind that curtain was an old, ancient oak door. And the abbot took this wooden key. This was not a modern thing at all. This was so long ago. And so he took out this wooden key, put it in the keyhole, and turned that key. It hadn't been opened for many years, decades even, so it was hard to open. But he managed to open it. And as he pulled the door open, imagine an old wooden door as it opened. And as soon as that creak disappeared, then he started to hear the music once again. And oh, it made his heart beat so fast. He was so excited. And it was so incredibly beautiful. He couldn't help but cry. And then the abbot, he saw at the end of the corridor, once a wooden door was open, there was another door. And that door was an iron door. And so the abbot had the second key on the ring, which was an iron key. And as they approached the second door, the abbot looked at the Australian and said, "Are you sure you're ready?" He said, "Yes." So the abbot put the key in the second keyhole, turned it, and this time he had to really pull it hard because it was a bit rusty. And once it opened, you could hear the sound of that music so much more clearly. And the more clear and loud it was, the more thrilling it was. Like every part of his body was vibrating in tune with the most incredible, exciting, wonderful music he'd ever heard in his whole life. And now he was soon going to find out what was causing it, where it came from. But he noticed there was another corridor with a third door at the end. And as you would expect, they had 4 keys, so this was not the last door. And as he approached it, he was really impressed just with how valuable this third door was. It was solid silver with precious stones embedded in it. And he got out this silver key, put it in the keyhole, turned it, and opened the third silver door. This one didn't make much noise because silver doesn't, it doesn't go rusty. Silver's got its own protective qualities to it, so it opened up without a sound. But once that door was opened, the music was even more thrilling. You could hardly stand it. It was, you know, when it's so beautiful, so thrilling, so exciting, sometimes you wonder if your heart would explode with the joy and excitement of this. But there was one more door to go. They went down this dark passage. When they came to the end of this passage, they came to the golden door, made of solid gold, worth a fortune. But that was just the gold. There were diamonds set into this golden door. It was just they spared no expense on it. Whatever was behind this golden door studded with diamonds must be something really impressive. And of course it was. and the abbot paused. He looked at this Australian man, who was now shaking with excitement. He said, "Oh, what's behind this door is the source of this incredible music, like heavenly music, not worldly at all, but something which was so thrilling and delightful, better than anything you could ever hear with your ears." And the abbot turned to him and said, "Sir, are you really ready for this?" Then many monks who saw this went mad, crazy. "Are you ready?" And this Australian young monk said, "Well, I'd go crazy if I don't find out. So yes, please open the door." So the abbot took the gold key, put it in the keyhole and turned the lock. And he opened the door, the last door. And you know what was behind that door? "I'm sorry, I can't tell you, you're not monks." They hated me in Kuala Lumpur for that. I think you can understand the feeling, can't you? But that's just a bit of fun and games. And the point is, why do you need to know? Nothing to do with you. But anyhow. So anyhow, that was just a nice little bit of talking about all sorts of stuff. And also just about having a positive attitude. Things you don't really need to know, which is not important, none of your business, you can leave them alone and have a much more peaceful life. But things which you do really want to have happen, just give that inspiration. And as far as I know, in my mind, whatever you want to do, achieve, if it's really good and positive and helpful for many beings, there's very little can stand in your way. Seeing that your abilities are only limited by your doubts. But once those doubts are overcome and you have confidence it can be done, then it will be done. Whatever you need to hope for 2023. Make it clear, make it good, something which is not just for you, but for others, for family, for community, for country, whatever it is. Beautiful things, peace, harmony, prosperity, the lack of some of the sufferings which we have in this world. Inspire yourself, and then you can inspire others. You'd be surprised at how many other beings in this world make it happen. So that's a little talk. We now have about 20 minutes until midnight. So what I'm going to do now is, those of you who need to stretch or go to the toilet, fine. But right now, we're going to start doing some meditation until the midnight comes. So please get yourself, it's only 20 minutes, so don't need to worry too much about you've never meditated before. And if you want to find out what's behind that fourth door, you can ordain as a monk, or nuns count as well. We'll let nuns know what's behind that fourth door. Okay. So, it's great to close the eyes. I'm really quite surprised that I got lots of energy this evening, so thank you for that, because I draw my energy from you. If you're interested in laughing at my jokes, that keeps me awake. So whatever happened in 2022, This is what we let go of. I always mention whenever I see people traveling with me at the airport, they always carry so much baggage. Even those people who were from KL, Kuala Lumpur, who were with me on the retreat, I saw the number of suitcases they had. As for me, I just take my yarn, little bag, that's all. So when you travel through your life from one year to another year, please do not take so much baggage. We always think we learn from the past. We don't. If you have a negative mind in a bad mood, we always remember the bad stuff which happened to us. That's not fair. So instead, let all that past disappear. If you want to keep anything, keep the good memories of 2022. If ever I eat a banana, an old banana, it may have a few pieces on it which have gone rotten. I don't throw the whole banana away. I take out the rotten bits and keep the delicious bits and eat them. That's just like your past. Don't eat the mistakes of the past. Throw those mistakes away, they become fertilizer. But eat the delicious, beautiful, pure parts of the past. Those things which you've done which inspire you and inspire others. Acts of forgiveness which work. Acts of kindness which inspire others. All those beautiful things you've said and done, even thought over the last 12 months. Think about them. What's the most beautiful, inspiring thing you've done in 2022? You know, I think about that. Maybe just because this woman told me yesterday, one of the nicest things I've done was to offer Ayaseri a place in Jhana Grove for 1 year after Ayawayama died. It's a nice thing to do. It makes me feel good as a monk. What makes you feel good as a human being? If you remember the beautiful things you've done in 2022, that will take the happiness in to 2023. It's exactly what you do when a person dies and they want to take their meritorious acts into their next life. It's a training. A training of how to make passages, transits from one place to another. Remember your good qualities and all the kindness which you've done and all the kindness which you've received over the last 12 months. And you realize that you can face 2023 with a lot of hope and positivity. The very, very wonderful people in this world. And you've got a selection of them here this evening at Dharmaloka Center. Kind people. People who are not interested in what they can get out of you or that they can give to you. The kindness, the care. And it reminds you that the world has some very wonderful people in it. This human realm is only just below the heavenly realms. It's above the animal realms. And animals can be very kind and beautiful as well. But this is the human realm. So see its beauty and see how in 2023 you can add to its beauty, to add to the kindness in the world, to add to the softness, compassion. Every time you go to work, never think, oh, this work, I don't enjoy it. Bring some happiness to work with you. And share that happiness just with a smile, or just offering somebody a cup of coffee if they need one. Whatever you can do to make your office a happier place also makes the world a happier place. Simple things like somebody wants to cut in front of you in a traffic jam, please let them with your blessing. Little acts of kindness, as they say, do wonderful things in this world. And if at all possible, give kindness and give time to your children. Don't judge them so harshly. Be kind to them. It's very difficult being a kid. We sometimes forget what it was like. And kid, children, please give some love to your parents. They're very easy to please, parents. A new year, just say, I love you, mummy. I love you, daddy. And mean it. And as you are cultivating these thoughts, can you notice how they make your mind soft? How they bring a sense of joy. You're not lonely. You have people who care about you and people you care about. And that care is one of the keys to meditation, the keys to keeping precepts, the keys to wisdom. Because I care about my mind, we hang together in a state of peace a lot of the time. Best of friends. Because I care about my body, it usually stays amazingly healthy. Because I care about wherever I am and whoever is with me. That care keeps the beautiful gift of what a monk can give to others. I can't write in a donation to you. I cannot give you any food. I have few possessions. But the possession which I have in abundance is my respect and care for each one of you. And the more I share that, the more I have. So now I usually go feeling my breathing. So I breathe in and out in a state of care and peace, even silence. In this center, the New Year's Eve celebration is done in an amazing amount of silence. Usual parties, there's noise, songs, dancing, people being silly. Here, we have silence. It doesn't have to be perfect silence. Just enough silence to be able to rest and find peace in this moment. Silence is holy. There is more truth in silence than you'll ever find in words. Thoughts can come close to the truth, they never actually land on the truth. Silence can go right inside of truth. In silence you have space, vast space. You have freedom. The words give you business to do. The silence calms all that busyness until it disappears. It is a silence which unites us. The words usually cause misunderstanding and even arguments. In silence, we can feel what binds us together. How do you feel right now? If you do feel tired and sleepy, don't fight it. Care for it. If you feel fear of the future is so uncertain. You cannot predict it. So come into this present moment and rest here for a while. The past creates business to be fixed. Don't let the past spoil the holy moment, not the holy day, the holy moment of now. We can really be at peace, letting the future and the past recede away from you. No need to count the minutes. I will be quiet for the next 5 minutes. Until we come close to 2023. And please care and worship and venerate the present moment with me. getting close. It's now 2023. 2022 has disappeared into the past, vanished, never to arise again. So now we're going to give you the blessing for the happiness and well-being of 2023. Nati me saranang anyang Buddho me saranang varang Etena satcha vajena Sotite hotu sabada Nati me saranang anyang Dharmo me saranang varang Etena satcha vajena Sotite hotu sabada Nati me saranang anyang Sangho me saranang varang Etena satcha vajena Sotite hotu sabada. Sadhu, 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 and Happy New Year to you all. There you go. What? Very good. So now remember to please find a policeman and get your breath tested and see what they say. Excellent.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. You're the first one to say Happy New Year to him. What does one say? The sweetest teacher in the world. I will be if I keep eating sugar.